Accession number 28896, Reel 10.
Mr. Blewitt, Reel 10. You wanted to tell me a story of, involving the army doctor.
Yes. It was about the time that I'd gone down to Padgett, you know, to see about getting in the Air Force. And prior to that, this friend of mine, we'd gone out to the pitches. One of the nights when we could, from the camp, used to get out twice a week, and we were going to the pitches. And oh, he's putting aerial up for somebody. Sorry. And he'd been complaining about his stomachache. I'd been out delivering stuff, rations and whatnot, and I come back and he said, I don't know whether to go out or not. And I said, I said, well, what's the matter with you? He said, oh, I've got a stomachache. Oh, it'll be all right, you know. Get away at the toilet, you know. Oh, Bernard, still there. Anyway, we went out. I was driving the wagon, as it happened, the Passion wagon, going to Darlington, and we're going to the pictures. And then he was still on about his stomach. So the drill was when we used to come in and park the wagon up in one of the school yards in the town, in Gladstone Street. Take the rotor arm out, you know, and then off we go to the pitches. We used to call in at hour at my house, how are you, blah, blah. And then we used to call round his house. Unfortunately, when we went round to his house, his parents weren't in. They'd gone out somewhere visiting. And so we just tootled off to the pictures. The Regal saw the picture. He still complained about his, wouldn't have no ice cream or anything like that. Come back, called in at the house, their house again. He lived in Vine Street, which wasn't far away from the picture house. They still weren't in, so we just carried on back to the, where we'd parked up the lorry, because we had to go down to the middle of the town where the old bus station used to be, where the lads used to be waiting to get in. So anyway, we went back to camp. The next morning I was going to off to Padgate. So I said to the, we had a corporal in our room, and I said to him, make sure he goes sick. Don't let him talk himself out of it. I said, he's been complaining about his stomach all the time. There must be something wrong. I will do. So off our tootles to Padgate. There was about five of us, I think, five or six. And I was down there a couple of days. We didn't get in. They didn't want any air gunners when we went. So after sitting the test for the pilot, which was not too bad really, if I'd have known what was going on and studied it up a bit, because it was only stuff you did in the last year at school, but we weren't expecting that. So anyway, we come back. We were thanked for volunteering, but blah blah. So anyway, we come back. So I said, and I took this Scotch lad who was with me. I took him home. I said, well, we can't get back to camp tonight. I said, we'll sort it out tomorrow. So he slept. We both slept together in my bed. And next morning, there was a knock on the door, and it was my friend. Closest friend, Ken Clarkson, and he said, in them days, he used to knock on the door and just open it, you know, very rarely they were locked. And my mother was there, and she said, oh, he's just getting up, and he shouted up the stairs. He said, get up, he said, I've got some bad news for you. So anyway, got downstairs, and I said, "What's the bad news?" He said, "It's Mickey Winter." He said, "He's dead." How can he be dead? What's the matter with him? I said, "You only had a stomachache." He said, "What happened?" He'd reported sick on the morning, and the procedure was that whoever was reported sick, they went to a place called Gatherley Castle. It's like a casualty clearing station. Reported sick, seen the doctor there, and the doctor had just like left him on a stretcher and said, "Oh, well, you know, we'll under observation, more or less." During the night, it turned out that he'd had appendicitis. Appendix burst, peritonitis set in, and he realised, sent him off to Catrick Hospital. He died on the way to the hospital. And to me, that was like sheer neglect on his part. He had any doubts at all, he should have sent him to the hospital straight away. What made it worse was that the surgeon at the hospital said if he'd had him in earlier the day before, he could have saved him. So his mother, he was batman at the time to a Captain Gray, and he was a gentleman. And he said to me, "You take my car, go into Darlington, see Mrs. Winter. Anything she wants to do, you stick with her, you know, until the funeral." And she was really heartbroken, and she blamed herself for not being in the house the night we come in. She said, "If I'd have been in and seen what pain he was in," because the Darlington Memorial Hospital was just across the road from, she said, "I would have insisted that he go, take him over there, and there would have, I'm not saying it could have been a different tale, they might have kept him at all, but if he'd have been there, he would have been on the job." And so she'd always blamed herself for him dying, like, you know.
Was it usual for you in your unit to have a sick parade every morning?
Yes.
The people reporting sick?
Yes, every morning. That was the first thing. You used to go on parade, anybody reporting sick used to fall out. And off they used to go to this Gatherley Castle.
Whilst you were at the hall, the Dunkirk had happened. You know, the bad.
Oh, that had gone. Yeah.
Leading up to that, and you know, the defeats that were going on in France. What was what were your feelings about that and those around you?
Well, we were expecting to be getting sent over to France, but it was just the opposite. They were evacuating, and that was it. So what we were sort of on the brink. We didn't know what was going to happen. But in the meantime, that was when we went down to, a section of us were sent down to Lincolnshire.
Did you recall seeing any of the troops coming back from Dunkirk or being billeted around you?
No, we were inland, and most of them had been evacuated down the south of England. So
what was the mood at the time?
Very wary. We expected a follow-up, and we were expecting paratroops and whatnot to be dropping out the sky, which would have been England, as far as we were concerned, we would have been snookered, because we had no rifles, no ammunition. I don't know whether I told you about the going into Darlington with a rifle and a gas mask and whatnot. To boost the morale up of the, and we hadn't a bullet between us. When you went on guard, you got issued with 5 rounds of ammunition, which you had to sign for, or the guard commander had to sign for. And when we were on guard, whoever was on actual guard, he got the 5 rounds, which you had to sign for. His rifle, and he's just waiting there for somebody to drop down. So if anybody had come after 5 rounds, that would have been it. There was nobody else in the camp seemed to have any. So it finished up with one or two having rifles and some had pickaxes. And total disaster it would have been. If it had kept on coming, there wouldn't have been any England at all. And that was what the way we looked at it.
As drivers, had you been issued with a rifle, although you didn't have ammunition for it, which you carried
in your
truck?
Oh, we got a rifle issued.
You carried that in your truck, did you?
Just took it in the wagon, you know, and it was one from the First World War. It wasn't an up-to-date Lee Enfield. It was one that got from the First World War. As far as I know, it was Canadian issue, I think.
And the Ross Canadian Ross rifle.
That's it. As I say, we had it in the wagon, but we had no ammunition for it. So I think the Home Guard were better off.
What date did you move to Louth in Lincolnshire?
It was 1940. As far as I remember, it was round about September, October. Went down there.
Did the whole company move?
No, just a section of us, about 20 men. And we moved into this big detached house. There was about five men to a room, you know. There was a detachment, not a detachment, a section of workshop personnel to look after the wagons, the maintenance. The rest were drivers delivering round about Market Raisin and round the area round about there.
So you're still only basically delivering rations?
Yes, just the same, just basically delivering rations.
Do you remember any of the units that you were supplying?
I can't remember the names and numbers, but I remember there was one, there's a Hussar regiment that had horses. They still had horses in
yeah, I think we've got that actually.
Yeah, that was it.
You're looking at the horses, that's right. And the accommodation you say was in the house, a
in the house.
Presumably.
It's all right, lovely, on the floor, but it was, there was no beds, it was just on the floor. But it was nice, it was a house, it was nice and warm. We had our ration of coal and whatnot, and those different fires. And we needed it because it really come down heavy with snow, and it was very flat and a bit dodgy driving at times, you know.
What kind of an area was Louth? What kind of an area was it? It wasn't an industrial area,
was
it?
Oh, no. I've often wondered, really, because just like ordinary town, no, I never saw any factories or anything like that there.
So where was the depot in relation to your billets?
Oh, it was about 5 mile away in between Louth and Market Raisin. I think it was Market Raisin. But we just did the same, basically the same, just going there, getting loaded up and delivering.
Did you know where you were going to which units you were going to prior to moving to the depot, or did you go to the depot and then they told you where you were going?
Oh no, before we set out, you got a work ticket to tell you which whereabouts you were going. It was just a matter of going there. We didn't have any reps with us. They more or less trusted us that, so you went there and just picked your stuff up and then carried on to the unit. We didn't have any reps staying with us.
Did you have to load the truck yourself, or was that done by the depot?
Well, no. In theory, the driver didn't do any loading, but you went in the back when they were loading it onto you, so you knew what you were getting or what you were supposed to be getting. You know, although you weren't responsible for it, they'd give you a sheet and say you've got so and so and so and so and so. So you made sure you did, and you signed for it, and then where you went.
And when you got to the other end, what was the process?
Well, the other end was generally the cookhouse you went to. Sergeant Cook would be there checking off to make sure he got what he had to do, you know. So very rarely that there was anything missing, because that was your job, just to get in the back and see that you were getting what you were signing for, you know, and made sure you everything was there before you put your tarpaulin down wrapped up. Otherwise, you're running the risk of somebody borrowing one of your items, you know.
What kind of rations were you carrying?
Well, in those days, you're getting like a cheese, for instance. You're a big
round wheel.
Cheese. You'd get meat, you know, absolute meat, not the tin stuff. You used to get the joints of beef, sugar, whatever, in sacks. It wasn't until later that they started dishing them out in boxes of.
There was a section. How many trucks would that be in your section?
About a dozen.
And were you the only truck carrying those supplies from that depot? Were you the only ones involved? Or were there other RASC units there?
Well, I never saw any. We seemed to have that area to cover, you know. There might have been some farther on in other depots, but that roundabout, that rather, was the only one. We never bumped into anybody else.
Finding your way around, did you get the opportunity to run around before you started working? Or?
No, you just went along, and of course there was no signpost. They took all the signposts down in case of invasion. So you'd go along, you maybe have a dispatch rider, and go and have a fly around beforehand, and then when you went out, you know, you want to be up here, turn left, and you'd come to the camp, you know. So it was just like trial and error, more or less. But you didn't do it when you had a fair idea where it was when you got loaded up. You know, you used to go out before. And I think if I remember right, that the wagon, they had a wagon with drivers on when we first went down. And somebody who was supposed to know the area. And we had to look out the back and see where we were going and that, you know. So you'd have a fair idea when you went. It wasn't. It was all within a radius of about 30 miles. The people were the units who were going to supply, so I don't think there was much danger of getting lost, you know.
What other duties did you have carrying supplies?
Well, more or less, we had our own detachment, so we just had to look after ourselves. We didn't have no. It was very lax in one respect. Apart from a guard on the wagons, that was about it. Just look after ourselves.
Were you in the town itself? How big is Louth?
Again, I couldn't say. More or less, it was just like a market town, like Darlington was supposed to be. We were billeted up in this big house, quite near a hospital. She used to see the nurses. I'm going to be chat with the nurses when they used to. And like I say, the bad weather was there, so it was snow, was quite, you know, be about 9 inches deep when we went around. So we weren't really going around much. There was a picture house there, a theatre, a picture house, I would say, called, because they did have a local talent show come on, and a couple of our lads went, who was a good accordionist, one of them, and he went on and performed. That was just thing, and then it was picture house after that. They had a dance hall at the town hall. In them days, I never used to drink. In fact, I first started to drink down at Lough. Pint shandy, the big man, you know. And of course, a few of the others there were seasoned drinkers who had been out. And I must tell you this, it's amusing. They had to go into the dance on a Saturday night, which is, like I say, in the town hall, you had to go up a flight of stairs. Maybe about 12. And we went to this pub, and there was about six of us. We get them in. I'll get my pint shandy, and these were on. So they decided they were going to get me drunk. I found out this afterwards. So I had my pint shandy and sipped there, we're drinking away. And I was after going to the toilet, outside the toilet. And while I was away, they'd got a double whiskey and ordered a double whiskey that they'd paid for it, you know, between themselves, and poured it into my drink. And when I come back, after a bit chap like, you know, we'll have to be getting on, you know. I said, "Pa, that tastes funny, that." And they said, "Funny? Mine's all right." I said, "It tastes funny." So, seeing that all paid, they'd all have a sip, you know. Tastes all right to me. Who goes round? Anyway, I finished it off. That was all I'd had, just that bit. So we go to the dance. As I say, the flight of stairs, and I was feeling a bit woozy by this time. Just got up to the top of the stairs, and somebody said something. I turned around sharp and flying down the stairs, back to the bottom again. You know, bump, bump, bump. I suppose if it had been ordinarily, I might have broke something, but with being I just lax and just picked them up at the bottom. Come on, what you do? You trip up or something. And I had no idea till the next day. I thought it was something funny.
How did you get on with the local people?
Very good. They were very good with us. Of course, at that time, we were supposed to be saving everybody, even though we hadn't a rifle. So they were very good with us. We never got invited out to anybody's house, because I don't suppose they could have the rations either, you know. But if you did, you'd try and reciprocate with taking something. You'd go to the cook, who was a very good cook. That's one thing made the job very pleasant, because we had a good cook, and he used to invent all sorts of dishes with what he had. Basic, but he used to make it feel good, better, you know. So you might go and if he went on leave, for instance, you'd go into the cookhouse and see what he could spare for your leave to take home. It'd only be like tins of bully or something like that. I mean, nothing elaborate. But all in all, they were good, the down north. Well, except the fact that it was bitterly cold. When we used to go for a bath, we used to go to the local swimming bath, and it was outside, and the pond was frozen over, the bath was frozen over. It was only a small place, frozen over. You used to get your slipper bath, which was hot. But some of the hardy ones, like, you know, they would want to go and have a swim, dive in and break the ice. You know, I never did that. I was not a great swimmer, so I never used to. I didn't fancy finishing up on the bottom of the baths.
Was there any rivalry between yourselves and other units in the area?
Well, there's always a bit of rivalry, but it only happened if you were going to a dance or something and maybe wanting to dance with the same girl. I never saw any. There was only once or twice, as a matter of fact, there was a corporal in our company, and he'd got on with one of the local girls, and apparently she'd been with somebody else, a civilian, before we'd arrived on the scene. And we're at this dance. There was another, just a little local, like a social dance, one night, and this corporal, he couldn't dance. Well, I used to be pretty nimble at the time, so he'd say to me, "Give her a dance," like so. I give her a dance. It just so happened that when I was dancing with her, when this bloke come in and assumed it was me that was with his girlfriend, so he wasn't very happy about that. Wanted to make an issue of it, but then this corporal stepped in and said, "It's nothing to do with him. I'm the one, you know. But it never come to fisticuffs, just a bit of pushing and shoving, you know.
What was the RSC reputation, you know, between yourselves and other infantry units, say, for example?
Well, they all thought we were a load of robbers, you know. my father's words coming back again. Rob all serving comrades, just because you were taking rations to them, they assumed that you were getting the best of everything, you know. You never seen any RASC man starving, put it that way.
And that didn't lead to any problems with
not really,
between individuals?
No, not really. They're just more or less assumed, well, good luck to them, I think, that wished it was me sort of style.
As I say, you were with a section. The main unit was still back in.
They were still back in Kirkbank. Comes Christmas, there was a captain come down. I don't know what with. He brought a lorry down. I know that. And there was about six of us due for leave, and I was one of them. Lucky enough, and we went back with him in the back of the lorry up to Kirkbank. We had to come back by train, and we come back on New Year's Eve. We had 7 days leave, come back on New Year's Eve of all times, and it was a terrible journey on the train. Darlington, we must have about three places before we got back to Lincoln, Louth. And then when we got in, well, we didn't expect you back tonight, you know, New Year's Eve. So there's still one or two missing out in the town, like, but it was too late for us to, so we just, I took the best of it and got our heads down.
And to be coming home at Christmas, how the family, of course, for the first time, really, you were away from home.
That's right.
I mean, you'd always been close to home.
Yeah.
How did they
they made an issue of it, like, you know, like party time. Thought I was it over there, and you're all right, and said yes, fine, no problems, like that. We didn't go berserk.